So at almost the exact same time, we realized the other was not who we thought. It was during my time in seminary, and my older cousin, Daniel, was living in Baltimore with his wife, Beth. Now, Daniel and I did grow up together somewhat. We had spent many family events in the same place, but he was a bit older than me, and he and I just weren't really close. Still, he was family, and I was far from mine at that time, so when he invited me to come visit for the weekend, it sounded like a good idea. Now, here's all I really knew about Daniel up until this point. He had been in the military. I knew he had done really well in his career in the military. I think he was in the special forces. I really can't tell you what that even means, but it seemed important. Special was in the title. He had gotten out of the military at this point, but that's about all I knew of him. And here's what Daniel knew about me. He knew I was in seminary preparing to be a pastor. Neither of us really knew each other, just facts about our lives up until this point. And both of those facts had some serious subtext that led both of us to believe that the other was fairly conservative. It was also the first few months of the Trump administration. And though I was going to seminary in New Jersey, I had gotten into a program in Washington, D.C. to study that interplay between faith and politics. I had moved there actually 2 days after the inauguration. So to say tensions were high politically would be a grand understatement. And it was a tension we were feeling daily. Every day, a new horrifying headline. But still, visiting family sounded nice. So I made that 45-minute drive from D.C. to Baltimore and spent the weekend with Daniel and Beth. And so I got there and we spent some time in small talk, catching up on life here and there. I settled my things into their guest room, and then they said, "Let's go out and grab a drink." And so we were sitting at this bar together, and we started to realize that the other was not who we expected. I was surprised and excited to learn that both of us were at the Women's March in D.C. just a couple months earlier, wondering how fun it would have been to run into each other in that crowd of thousands. And we dropped hints that neither of us was particularly pleased with the administration and started to realize we were on the same page. And then Daniel said something I won't forget. In the middle of this dual realization that the other was not what we thought, he said, "Wait, you're cool." Thanks. And I felt the same exact way. I remember saying, "You too." So much subtext in just 5 words of conversation. And it was so clear to me everything we meant by that statement. Both of us had built up assumptions about the other, me because of his strong military background, him because of my religious one, and both of us were wrong. Both of us needed to take a step back and actually see who the other person was. And I think our passage for this morning intentionally does something similar to us when we meet the main character. I think we're meant to think one thing about him, only for him to surprise us. And I think that surprise is the point. So our passage opens, and Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through it. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. Immediately, we should have our ears perking up. Throughout the Gospel of Luke, Jesus has told parable after parable and story in which a rich man is the villain. And not only is Zacchaeus rich, in this case, we are told the reason for his wealth. He's a tax collector. We've met characters like this before. We know who they are. Now, a little about tax collectors at the time. Tax collectors were Judeans who were employed directly by the Roman government to extract taxes on land, on products, on people. And in this system, the authorities received their money upfront, and then the tax collector charged commissions on what they collected. And often, that commission they collected was beyond what was necessary, adding even more economic oppression on top of what the empire was already extracting. So tax collectors were members of their own community who worked with the Roman Empire, the occupying force, to exploit their neighbors. It's pretty easy to see why they weren't well liked, an understatement at best. Now, Zacchaeus is not only a tax collector, he is the chief tax collector. He's the top of the top in this system of exploitation. So we should maybe immediately be suspicious of this character. Is he gonna behave poorly like the other rich folks we've seen show up in the parables? Is he gonna disappoint us like that rich young ruler who walked away in sadness because he couldn't fathom giving up his wealth, even if it meant entering the kingdom of God? Well, let's keep reading to see. Zacchaeus was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was short in stature. I think I went too far. Here we go, short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him because he was going to pass that way. Now, a fun little note here that has really nothing to do with anything other than it makes me smile is that the Greek here is a little vague. There's a lot of just he's in here. It's a little vague about who the he is referring to in the sentence because he was short in stature. The children's Sunday school song that maybe some of us know tells us that Zacchaeus was a wee little man. But it's also possible that Jesus is the one who was so short that Zacchaeus couldn't see him over the crowd. I think Sam called him a short king in our meeting this week. And so Zacchaeus had to climb the tree to see Jesus, who was the one who was short. There's really not much more to say about that other than the reminder that the Bible isn't always what it seems. And so we should allow it to maintain its mystery. And often when we do that, it's joyful and maybe even a little silly, and I think that's really special. Okay, moving on. It doesn't say in the text, but I can easily imagine part of what led Zacchaeus to climb that tree was not just his or maybe Jesus' height, but also a crowd that despises him so much, not letting him pass to the front. And behaving in predatory ways to his own community, he's ensured his place as an outcast among them. Undeterred, Zacchaeus climbs a tree so he can see Jesus. And this should be our first indicator that Zacchaeus is different from those rich folks we've encountered before. This man allows himself to become a little undignified in his pursuit of Jesus. And we love to see it. At this, early readers of the gospel might remember a parable just a chapter before, in which Jesus talks about a tax collector who humbled himself before God, owning his wrongdoing and being commended for doing so. Maybe Zacchaeus is more like that tax collector, the one in the parable, than the rich folks we've encountered before. Still, we anticipate, maybe alongside the crowd, Jesus's stern admonition to him. He's still made his living exploiting others, so we're ready for Jesus to take him down to size. And in a way, Jesus does, but not how we'd expect. Jesus says, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So he hurried down and was happy to welcome him, and all who saw it began to grumble and said, he has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner. Jesus brings him down, not to admonish him, but because he sees him for who he really is. Not how we and not how the crowd see him. In response, Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, look, half of my possessions I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of everything, I will pay back four times as much. Zacchaeus seems to anticipate what it is Jesus is going to ask of him. It's clear by his wanting to catch a glimpse of Jesus earlier that he's heard of him before. News has spread. Maybe he's heard already of the things he's told rich folks to do, to give away their possessions. Maybe he's heard of Jesus talking about caring for the poor over and over. So he seems to know that Jesus is already going to ask this of him. And so it's another indicator that Zacchaeus is not quite what he seems. Another indication comes from some of the ambiguity.
I'd love to see the flop for just the 20 plus.
Our translation makes it seem
happy like you. I mean, because I had a pocket pair too, but I didn't fucking pocket 10, so.
It's not so straightforward. It's quite possible that
I would have liked this speaking more in the present. And then go ahead, go all in after the flop. Then I can get out of there. Operations.
Having heard that this is what Jesus would ask of him, he doesn't wait for Jesus to tell him to do it. He just begins the work before they even have their encounter. His change of heart already begun. Now, I find this interpretation intriguing because of what happens next. Jesus says, today salvation has come to this house because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and save the lost. Salvation has come to this house. Salvation, a noun, a state of being, a fact, has arrived. Zacchaeus, a man whose previous actions had separated him from his community, is brought back into the fold as a child of Abraham, just like his neighbors. If his status as a sinner, as he is called, as one who is outside of the community was due to his exploitation of them, then his redemption is linked to his payment of reparations. So there's justice happening on all sides. Friends, I think there's great hope in this story. I find hope that the one who we expect to continue to defraud and exploit has a change of heart, one that has tangible economic results. His change of heart leads to wealth redistribution. It's so easy to think that those who benefit from the power and privilege allotted to them in this age will never change their tune. Because what reason do they have to do so? What is their incentive? Now, it's unclear in this passage what Zacchaeus's incentive was. We don't know what made him realize that living in a new way was not only possible, but better. But maybe that's the point. Maybe we just need to know that it's possible. That Jesus came to save all the lost, and that includes those who have been duped by power, empire, privilege, white supremacy, Christian nationalism, racism, xenophobia, sexism, and the list goes on, and I'll lose breath. Maybe we just need the hope of remembering that things are not always as they seem, that change is possible. In his acceptance speech as mayor-elect of New York City, Zoran Mamdani stated that the only way to terrify a despot is by dismantling the very conditions that allowed him to accumulate power. The only thing that makes the powerful afraid, it is the dismantling of the systems that created them. I'd like to add something. I think that what makes them shake even more is when the people who helped create those systems are part of their dismantling. When even those who have benefited from them will have no more because they realize that there is something better at hand. If Zacchaeus can have that change of heart, who's to say that those who occupy the halls of power in this country can't do the same? Friends, it is hard to feel that kind of hope these days. I don't really hold my breath for anyone in positions of power to have those drastic changes of heart. I think I would run out of air before it happened. But this story shows me that it's possible to hold on to that hope, because these folks are absolutely lost. And Jesus says he came to seek them out and to save them from their greed, their corruption, and their exploitation. To be lost in this context is not just about believing or not believing in a religious ideology. It's about what you do. The one who is lost in this passage is the one who is engaged in a system of exploitation. And though he gained wealth by it, he lost community. But the lost will be found. So it is my deep hope that lawmakers would be found by actually serving the interests of those they represent. that ICE agents would be found by becoming whistleblowers and dissenters, that billionaires would be found by giving away their wealth and repaying those who they absolutely defrauded to get where they are. It is my deep hope that the lost would be found as changes of heart lead to changes of action. Wealth redistribution, reparations, restoration of community justice. Let us be people who carry this hope, even when it seems impossible. Amen.